This is HPR episode 2414 entitled, What's in My Ham Shack, Part 1, and is part of the series, HAM Radio, QSK. It is hosted by Mr. X, and is about 22 minutes long, and carries a clean flag. The summary is, a description of what's in my amateur radio shack.
This episode of HPR is brought to you by anhonesthost.com. Get 15% discount on all shared hosting with the offer code HPR15. That's HPR15. Better web hosting that's honest and fair at anhonesthost.com.
Listened back to the audio, I realised that I'd been yammering on far too long, and so I've decided to split the show into two parts. I'm sure Ken will love that. So, two shows for the price of one. So this is part one. Hello and welcome, Hacker Public Radio audience. My name is Mr. X, and welcome to this podcast. As usual, I'd like to start by thanking the people at HPR for making this service available to us all. It's really a wonderful service. HPR is created by the community for the community. And the people behind HPR have gone to a great deal of effort over the years to try and simplify and streamline the whole process. And it's really quite straightforward, so you must have something interesting you can contribute. Why not just hit a record button on a microphone and give something a go, eh? Right. Now, this episode is something that's kind of hastily been pulled together. It's What's in My Ham Shack. And I think here in the UK, we're more liable to call it, you could say amateur radio room. That sounds a bit a bit clumsy. It's funny, a lot of amateurs here use the word shack, but they wouldn't call themselves a ham, they would call themselves an amateur. Though maybe the public would call us hams. Maybe it's a snobbery thing, I don't know. Just a by the by. So, anywho, obviously an amateur shack or ham shack can be, it can be massively elaborate, or it can be simple as having a handset walkie-talkie sitting on top of a table, and that's it. So I just thought I'd talk you through the bits and pieces I have in, or some of the bits and pieces I have in my ham shack. It's not really a big part of my life or hobbies these days, but it's gained a bit more interest in recent times because I'm a bit busier these days, and it's a kind of hobby that you can pick up and put down very quickly, whereas if you're coding something or doing something in computers, you need really to sort of concentrate and focus on things, and that's a bit more difficult if your time's a bit short. Anyhow, on with the show. So the first piece of equipment is a stand. I'll talk about my handset. It's quite embarrassing because I used to only have one handset. I've now got flaming four of the things. It's why the hell would I need four handsets? For a very, very long time, I only had this one handset. It's a standard handset. It says on the front, standard W Turbo. On the back, it says model number C510E, 144/430 MHz FM transceiver. C510A, it says on the front here. So I think it's for the American market. That's a, yeah, I always get confused about this. I think it's for the American market, so the repeater settings are a bit wrong for the UK. But it's a lovely wee neat handset. Sits really nice in the hand, and it takes you can take the back off, and it's got three pin light batteries. So it means you can, if you're never stuck, the batteries go flat, you can always buy a new set, and you can put rechargeables in it, which is what I use, obviously. I hardly ever use this handset anymore. That's it on. That's it off. And a year or so after I got the handset, they were quite cheap handsets in their day as well. Well, they were £120, which back then was probably quite cheap. And I was at an amateur radio show, and there was a bring and buy, a junk sale, if you like, and somebody was selling a one of the add-on kits that go with the standard. You could buy the two parts together, but at the time I was too mean, being your typical Scot, so I was just too mean to buy it. But this was a very good price, and so I thought, oh, a bargain! I must buy it. So I bought it. I fitted a. It's called a power booster, and the idea is that I fitted a cigarette lighter socket to it, and I tried it, and it worked. That was as far as it went. But the idea is, it's called a power booster, and it's a kind of metal block thing, and it's just to give you an idea, it's 6 inches by 6 inches. Ooh, by 1.5 inches, something like that. And it's got fins on it, and there's a flick switch on the front, off on, an LED with a power light, a power LED next to that, and then a TX light, an RX light. It's got a standard logo on the top, a VHF UHF legend, and a speaker socket, and on the back it's got a fan. So basically, what this does is it amplifies both the RF radio frequency and also the audio. So you just stick this thing under your seat, and then you take the cable that comes out the thing, and it goes into a proprietary special cable which plugs into the bottom of the handset, and it cuts out the audio from the handset and routes it through the box so that the audio becomes much louder if you plug a speaker in. And the RF, your signal gets boosted as well, because it's only a one watt radio, the handset, like maybe 25, 30 watts or something like that through this thing. And obviously there's an aerial socket on the back, SO239 type thing, so you can have an external aerial in your car. So that was the idea of that, as I say, but I never actually used the flaming thing, so that was a waste of money, wasn't it? And then, of course, what kicked off this recent interest in amateur radio was, I thought, well, this handset, the standard handset, is too good to use. I've hardly used the thing. Ah, oh, dear. So I bought, as you all know, and we sick the back teeth of, a Bofeng UV5R. Don't worry, that's as much as I'm going to say about it. Nothing else. I have a Bofeng UV5R. That's all I'm going to say about it. I'm not going to mention it again, honestly. The UV5R. Right. So that's my second handset, the Bofeng UV5R. I won't mention it. Right. The next handset I bought was, well, when I was listening to some amateurs, they were talking about this about digital modes and whatnot. And there's a new, there was a, I don't know if it was a new repeater, but the range was improved, and they'd obviously been working on it, the local people. And it piqued my interest when I was listening on the news. On the RSGB Music, it's broadcasted every Sunday. And I purchased a Retivis DMR handset. I've just got one here, if I just turn it on. Ooh, there you go. That's what that sounds like. And it's DMR, Digital Mobile Radio. I think that's what it stands for. I am in no means an expert in any of this. And so there's a lot of confusing terminology when you first get into certainly DMR radio, I don't know about. There's other kinds. That's, of course, the other confusing thing. You've got a whole slew of digital radio standards. You've got DMR, Fusion, D-Star. There's a whole host of them. I only know about DMR. So obviously, with the digital radio, it takes the audio signal, digitizes it, and sends it as ones and zeros to the other side, and it gets decoded and turned back into audio. It's got a kind of unusual sound to it, which you kind of get used to. At first, it sounds a bit rough and ready, and then you think it's wonderful once your ears kind of once you get your, as they say, if once you get your digital ears, and your brain kind of just filters the artifacts out, and you know when you have your speaking to, on a mobile to a mobile station, there's no hiss and noise and crackle, so in fact, it's even ha it's quite hard to tell if they're mobile sometimes. So it's quite an interesting mode. As I say, you've got confusing terminology like code plugs, color codes, talk groups, slots, all this sort of nonsense. A code plug, for example, that's just the programming file. Why the hell can they not just call it a programming file? They've got to call it a code plug. Aye, so that's that. I'm not going to go into any detail about all of that sort of stuff. As I say, if I get a chance, I'll maybe insert a wee example of how digital audio sounds. So every user, the thing about the DMR is that every user on the system has to apply for a unique user ID number. And so you basically go onto a website, and I think you've got to send a copy of your. So you've got to have you got to send a copy of your amateur license, because you've got to have an amateur license to use it. You can listen, but you can't transmit unless you, to get you need that to get that you need to get a user ID, and you submit that with proof of your license, and then they give you an ID. I've got a number of bits and pieces with the retriever's handset. I've got a mobile microphone because I sometimes use it in the car. I've got a battery eliminator which basically plugs into the cigarette lighter so that you can power it from the car battery. And the retriever's RT3, which is what this handset is. There's a clone, there's a whole number of them out there. For example, it's the same as the MD380. That's the generic handset that kicked all this DMR malarkey off. It's a very cheap handset, I think it was £90. All these clones are £90. Whereas until these came out, the DMR radios were a lot more expensive. So obviously, these kind of handsets, the retrievers, MD380s, are very, very popular. And because of the popularity, the firmware was hacked. Travis Goodspeed, Goodspeak, can't remember his name, something like that. The chap that did the should have done a bit more preparation, shouldn't I? He did the a hack for the firmware of these radios, and I had a go at installing that. And you can do it through a Raspberry Pi. So I've got a Raspberry Pi with an image on it. And you clone a Git repository, and then compile the software, and then write the firmware to the radio. And this gives a number of interesting features. You can you can download the whole user database of DMR IDs from the DMR website, which is Brandmeister Network, and in that way, whenever a station calls on your radio, it can look at this huge database of with all the IDs in it, and it can pop up on the it co pops up on the display what the call sign is and the user's location and whatnot. So that's very handy. Obviously, because there's new people joining all the time, it does eventually go out of date, sort of thing. But then you can just update the database again just by running a wee command on the command line. The hack firmware also allows you to listen to private calls as a you get two modes, a private call and a group call. It's generally a group call. You're speaking you're using a group call mode. But private calls, for example, you might be wanting to change settings on the repeater to maybe to switch to another reflector. A reflector is like just going into a different room or to access, to speak to people from a different location, if you like. And so to switch reflectors, when you switch the reflector, the repeater repeats back to let you know that you've switched the repeater. It'll tell you what the number of the repeater is. Think of the reflector as, think of it as like being like a phone number. So, you know, if I want to go to reflector 4400, which is the UK reflector, I would just punch that in and the repeater would come back, reflector 440 4400, and it would be a private call you were having to the repeater, so none of the other people in the area would hear that unless they got the hacked firmware. It's not encrypted. It's just a private call, a person to person. So the other radios don't receive it unless you've got the hacked firmware. So that's a benefit. You can also log details out to a computer or a Raspberry Pi. I've kind of experimented with that. So you can see, you could leave the radio on and it logs to the command line or to a file or whatever. Details about stations that have been on the air with the timestamps and call signs and all that stuff. Kind of vaguely interesting. There's lots of other wee bits and pieces it allows you to do. Tweak the backlight brightness and more control over the buttons on the side and whatnot. But really, that's probably more detail than you want to know. So the next handset I've got is a Hytera handset. It's a Hytera PD365. Tiny wee handset. And it's really used, it's really a business handset. It's kind of used in the, probably mostly in the hospitality sort of business and whatnot. One of the local amateurs calls it a Fisher Price radio, like a kid's toy basically. it's really small and dinky. And in fact, that was the reason I purchased it, because it's about half the size of the Retrievus. And, you know, I found the Retrievus, if I was walking about with the Retrievus, I couldn't clip it to my back pocket. It was just far too big and clumsy. So that's why I bought a second DMR handset, the Hytera PD365. It's not as advanced as the Retrievus, and you can't hack it either. But the size just makes it so convenient when you're going out and about the place. So I actually prefer the Hytera to the Retrievus. And I'm not one for snobbery of brands or all this sort of stuff, but you know, it's probably about twice the price of the Retrievus. It comes with nothing. Even a programming lead costs you £25, which is a bit ridiculous, really. Whereas you get everything all included in the Retrievus. Covert earpiece was, I don't know, £15-£20, something like that. So, but to give you an idea how robust this thing is, one of the amateurs in the area, he accidentally ran over the top of it with his car. And was quite alarmed, obviously, only to discover that the thing was just slightly scuffed, and that was as much damage it was caused. So I suspect if the Retrievus had been run over, it would have been crushed. So that's the difference between the cheap Chinese models and the Hytera one. But I mean, the Retrievus is still working well and showing no signs of failing or anything, so it's great value, the Retrievus at £90. So that was my four handsets. The standard, the Bofeng UV Fire, which I said I wouldn't mention again, the Retrievus, and the Hytera.
Okay, this is an example of how analog audio sounds. The quality should be quite smooth and not too much hiss, because I'm quite close to the other radio, so it should be a good signal strength. But you know, if you're in a condition where the signal gets a bit weaker, you get more noise and hiss and crackle and whatnot. Compared to digital, we don't get any of that at all. And of course, if I release the transmit button here, you'll hear the squelch kick in, and you'll hear that as it unkeys. I'll just do that now a few times. And again. So that was a squelch kicking in. The next example I'll do, I'll use, I'm going to give you an example of digital audio using digital DMR. And in the middle of the broadcast, you'll hear a kind of strange noise. That's one of the minor bugs that the Retrievus has. It's a budget radio after all at just about £100. So, and I think it tends to try and hold on to the signal just a wee bit too long, and their connection gives up, and you get this kind of, it's almost like an oscillation sort of, the sound just continues and finally cuts out. It doesn't happen too often, but every now and again, it doesn't happen with the Hytera radio, so that's a wee bug. I'm sure I read somewhere there's quite a few wee bugs in the Retrievus. Retrievus radio, which is, remember, the Retrievus RT3 is the same as MD380. There's a whole host of them that all are the same radio, essentially, just rebadged. Okay, that's probably enough of the analog audio. Good stuff.
This is a test. Just to give an example of how DMR radio sounds, digital mobile radio. As you can hear, it's not 100% fluid and smooth, and you can tell there's artifacts in it, but it's quite readable, and there's no noise, no hiss or crackle or anything like that, so it's actually quite good, good fun. It allows you to talk to other amateurs all around the world from the comfort of an armchair, just with a wee handset. You can actually test DMR using a repeater, a local repeater, or you can get a hotspot which connects to your broadband or via a mobile phone and out into the internet and do it that way. So that's, hopefully that's enough to give you a flavour of how it sounds anyway.
I think that's about it then. I hope you all enjoyed that and didn't bore the pants off you. Why don't you contribute something yourself if you've got maybe you've got an amateur shack and you can go through like I did, or some other interesting hobby. Must be something you can contribute with. Okay, that's it for this episode. If you want to contact me, I can be contacted at mrx@hpr@googlemail.com. That's mrxathpr, the at symbol, googlemail.com. So until next time, thank you and goodbye.
Listen.
You've been listening to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.org. We are a community podcast network that releases shows every weekday, Monday through Friday. Today's show, like all our shows, was contributed by an HBR listener like yourself. If you ever thought of recording a podcast, then click on our contribute link to find out how easy it really is. Hacker Public Radio was founded by the Digital Dog Pound and the Infonomicon Computer Club, and is part of the Binary Revolution at binrev.com. If you have comments on today's show, please email the host directly, leave a comment on the website, or record a follow-up episode yourself. Unless otherwise stated, today's show is released under a Creative Commons Attribution ShareAlike 3.0 license. Yeah.